Hello, everyone. I hope you're doing well. I'm Patrick Casey, sitting in for Henrik Palmgren, and you're listening to Red Ice Radio. Our guest for this show is Paul Kersey. Paul has been a guest on Red Ice more than once in the past, but for those unfamiliar with him, he is perhaps best known for being the creator of Stuff Black People Don't Like, a blog that examines racial issues in America. In this show, we'll be discussing recent events, political polarization, and the alt-right. Paul, welcome back to Red Ice. How are you?
It's been a while, but it is fantastic to be back on an invaluable program. It's great to finally talk to you, by the way. Congrats to all the success you guys have had and the hard work you guys are doing nationwide to inspire hundreds, thousands, hopefully tens of thousands of people, and eventually hundreds of thousands of people. So keep up the great work.
Definitely. Well, things certainly seem to be heating up lately. What do you make of the left's response to the Trump administration's short-lived policy of separating illegal immigrants from their children?
The media never used the words illegal immigrants. They tried to frame this as an immigrant situation. Right. And of course, I'm talking about the mainstream corporate media, the way that they continue to do these sob stories about illegal immigrant children who are separated from their mother or father. You know, you never really hear much about that aspect. And I love the fact that the much derided head of the DHS actually came out and she said that, hey, look, 10,000 of these 12,000 illegal immigrant children were unaccompanied. So let's stop this nonsense. I think that this was one of the finest moments of the Trump administration thus far, that he stood down. Yeah, he signed an executive order, but you know what? It's not that big of a deal because, again, he came out then afterward and said, hey, our policy should be no more. No. Right. And this was a very important moment for your normal conservative, your normal Republican who doesn't read harder, edgier websites. The fact that Trump stood his ground, the fact that throughout all of the upheaval, throughout all of the mendacity from the mainstream corporate media, the Time cover, all of it. You know, he blinked just a little bit by signing the executive order, but you know what? It really doesn't matter at the end of the day because we're going to see the court ruling that, you know, they have to be reunited that just came down. I think that was on June 27th. That's going to go all with the Supreme Court. And things are happening so quickly. I know that you want to talk about the divisive nature. You know, I do a podcast every week with Jared Taylor. And we did it this morning. We were talking about just how insane it is to think how the world has changed, how the country's changed so much in a year. And a lot of it is just because Trump has accelerated things and he's held his ground. And our friends in the media want to do everything possible to say, oh, this guy's a Nazi. He's a white supremacist. Look what all he's done. All he wants to do is enforce the law. And that shows you where the left, where the Democrats and where, you know, really just this anti-white coalition that makes up the Democrats, where they are right now. So I'm very optimistic after the cataclysmic events of 2017, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later, to really disrupt and create disharmony among the nascent right, whatever you want to call us. You know, I don't really care about right left ideas. I just want to know what's going to be best to help out, you know, white people. If it's right wing ideas, left wing ideas, I don't really care. I want to win. I want our people to have a future and our posterity to inherit something beyond a decadent third world country. So I think that there's a lot of reason to be optimistic right now.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed Trump's recent pivot to immigration. That certainly seems to be the most contentious issue. It's certainly the issue that I think there's, you know, the most energy for on both sides. So by focusing on illegal immigration or just immigration in general, he is, as you said, he's accelerating things. And I think that's for the best, honestly. I think that the further divided things get, the further polarized politics becomes in America while Trump is still in office, the better, right? Assuming that there could be some collapse or some cataclysmic event, we want Donald Trump or someone on our side to be, you know, the person in charge, right? We don't want to be under President Kamala Harris when there's, you know, some massive cataclysmic event in terms of civil unrest, right?
Look, civil unrest has already started. I was looking at the fantastic itinerary for our conversation you put together, and really the past week has just demonstrated that whatever you want to call civility is already out the window. I mean, who would have thought that someone as milquetoast as Sarah Huckabee would be harassed at this restaurant in Virginia and chased out to another restaurant and accosted, you know, verbally accosted. And then what we're seeing with, I mean, Mitch McConnell and his well, Chinese wife. I mean, come on, they're being confronted. I mean, when this kind of stuff happens, it really illustrates why one of Trump's great victories early on in his presidency back in 2017, before the horrific events of Charlottesville, was the fact that normal people, normal white Americans, were talking about Antifa and what a threat they represented to the republic, to the country, to the social fabric of the country. And I think we're seeing that again. And I think that's only going to escalate with these ICE protests across the country, where the federal government has come in and they've arrested a lot of these protesters. I mean, when you can't even have a coherent discussion about the importance of borders from a right and left, a Democrat Republican perspective, when you have Democrat candidates calling for the abolishment of ICE, obviously that means that they want open borders. You no longer have an avenue of dialogue possible. And I think that's where we truly are. The more radical elements, the people of color, the LGBTQ portions of the Democratic coalition, are basically booting out the white male remnant who still believe in liberalism and this nonsense and these pie in the sky racial egalitarianism. You know, that those days are over. I mean, Pat Buchanan's column that just got posted, the Democratic Party is no party for white males, heterosexual white males. And this is a great thing. All that's happening is a great thing. And Trump, appearing out of almost nowhere back in 2015 when he came down the escalator at Trump Tower there in New York in June of 2015, he basically escalated things that really weren't supposed to be happening until late 2020, early 2030s, when the country the demographics really kicked in. He's accelerated things. And the great thing, Patrick, for our side is whites are still a clear majority in most of the states. And those whites who are in majority minority states are getting a crash course lesson that a white minority is not going to be treated the same way that a black minority has been treated or a non-white minority has been treated by a very congenial, generous white majority. So,
well, I believe there's a term for that now. It's white extinction anxiety, right?
Again, Charles Blow column. I cannot believe an ombudsman at the New York Times allowed that to be published. When you see this kind of stuff, and then you see the comment section at a Daily Caller or a Breitbart or even a Daily Wire, you have normal conservatives, white conservatives, who are never confronted by this rhetoric, and they're forced to come to startling conclusions that this great experiment isn't working. And in fact, we're in the death throes of this great experiment. And that's where I believe we truly are, that this that the past 60 years that you and I, we had nothing to do with, we were born into this tyranny, it's coming to an end. And it's going to be fascinating to watch as corporate America, still clings to this idea that diversity is our greatest strength. And you're beginning to see more and more of the public sector, and that's largely due to Trump's influence and our great Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who, again, I mean, look at what just happened today in Portland. They arrested scores of these protesters. This is happening all across the country at ICE offices. This is a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's quite apparent at this point that the left doesn't care about the law. Rule of law is just the left is seeing as an obstacle to getting what they want. I mean, with regard to illegal immigration, right? They were complaining, "Oh, Trump's separating these families. It's terrible." And then Trump, being the master troll that he is, he signs an executive order saying, "Hey, we can keep them together in detention facilities," right? And then they were like, "Ah, well, that kind of forces the left to say, well, we actually just want them to come into this country, you know, by the millions unimpeded. That's kind of, you know, the separation thing. That's not really what we're really concerned with at the end of the day. But yeah, speaking of, you know, speaking of these protests and people getting arrested, I saw today that nearly 600 people, mostly women, went to D.C. to protest against immigration enforcement, right? Most of them were arrested and charged with unlawfully demonstrating, which is a misdemeanor. So did you get a chance to see anything about this? And if so, what are your thoughts on it?
You know, I haven't. But again, this just shows you that the federal government, when it's in our, you know, Jared and I were having this conversation earlier. And when I was younger, I read a lot of the crap from the Von Mises Institute, you know, your Nock, your Mencken, all this nonsense. And it really doesn't matter. The government is not necessarily evil. Obviously, men constitute a government. So if men are evil, then yeah, the government could reflect that. But the government in the hands of people who are competent and capable can be ruthless and efficient. And that's what we're seeing. And I just, it's inspiring because it's so nonsensical to believe that you can have this society where borders don't exist. You know, if you read what Reason Magazine puts out, their nonsense. I mean, the world that they want is basically will boil down to a Mad Max style climate at the end of the day, where everyone's high and drunk and blah, blah, blah. But what we're seeing is ruthless efficiency at its finest. And, you know, that's why when Trump, when he was still a candidate, Trump was talking about a Trump deportation force. I mean, Patrick, how many people do you think would if he were to call for a militia to actually start rounding up illegals, how many people do you think across the country would heed that call and gladly volunteer for that? I mean, this is the kind of thing that it sounds inconceivable, to borrow a term from, you know, Princess Bride, but I don't really think it is. I think people are very fed up. I think you're a normal American who has never really been confronted with all of this stuff. You know, Trump forced this conversation, and it wasn't supposed to happen, like I said, for a couple more decades. And it's happening now before our eyes. We are living in such a wonderful time for your listeners, for the people that you work with at Identity Europa, to be organizing and to be trying to create something positive that has a, at the end of the day, a destination that they want to go to, as opposed to it just being, you know, a bunch of people protesting and marching for no reason other than they want to protest and march. And I'm very encouraged by what we're seeing in not just the District of Columbia, Patrick, but in Portland and in these other states, where I think this is only going to spread because the left has made it clear they want open borders. They want their army to traverse across the Mexican United States border unimpeded. And that's just not happening anymore.
Yeah, thankfully. So a few minutes ago, you were talking about how the Democrat Party is increasingly becoming, you know, no party for white men, I believe is the phrase that Pat Buchanan used. So there's some very recent and very interesting developments in New York, actually, that relate to that. So the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, are a political party. They obviously, as the name would suggest, support socialism. They recently scored a very significant victory in New York. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah. What is her name? Isn't her name Apley, her surname Cortez, Puerto Rican chick, 28 years old. She beat this longtime incumbent white guy who actually came out and said, I can't help that I was born white. I mean, for the past 14 years, which means 7 election cycles, this congressman didn't even have a primary opponent. And, you know, he was upset about how racial she was making the primary. And yeah, she won convincingly. I mean, the district this guy was in is only 18% white. It's 50% Hispanic. I think it's 18% black and like 14% Asian. So it's kind of shocking this guy held on as long as he did. And, you know, you're seeing MSNBC and all these other outlets, Salon, Huffington Post, they're all gushing that finally the future has arrived. It's arrived too early. That's the problem. I mean, again, you have a very inspired and motivated base that Trump has cobbled together from the ashes of the Republican Party's, you know, inability and refusal, really, to talk about these concepts like immigration. I mean, look what just happened with Koch brother Paul, what's the guy's name in Wisconsin? Forgive me, Paul Ryan's embarrassing amnesty that just collapsed. They tried to ram it through Congress a bunch of times, and you've got a solid base of Republicans who no more, no mas. And now you're seeing this people of color coalition with these more militant younger Latinas winning, and it's forcing the Democrats to expose just how anti-white they really are. And in states like Colorado and Minnesota that are very close, that could go Republican, that could go Trump in 2020, that's not going to fly. And it's only going to motivate more and more people to reconsider their predilections and their proclivities when it comes to voting for a Trump ticket in 2020. So I'm loving what's happening in New York. And we're going to see, I mean, look what happened in Georgia, where you've got this embarrassing candidate Abrams, this Black Power candidate running for governor. And, you know, maybe in 8 years she could have won Georgia, but it's too early. It's too soon. They're showing their hand, and all the Democrats have is demographics motivated and animated by anti-white hatred and animosity. And it's just too soon. It's only going to get worse, Patrick. It's only going to get more and more in your face and transparent that that's what they represent now. And it's just happened too soon. There are too many people with their eyes open and aware that this colorblind experiment is coming to an end. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, if you look into what, you know, in terms of policy, what the radical left proposes, you know, what the DSA proposes and so forth, it's actually, or rather unsurprisingly, pretty insane. Many prominent people in the DSA have called for things like the abolition of the police, yep. You know, the abolition of prisons, and obviously the abolition of ICE is something that not only the DSA is calling for these days, but it's the fact that there is a growing part of the country that believes just these absurdities is, yeah, it's really evident that there are irreconcilable differences between red America and blue America. And, you know, some people would claim that Trump is being divisive and, you know, his message is dividing the country, right? We heard that from many never Trumpers during the election, but, you know, maybe you would agree with this, but I think that this division really has existed for some time, right? The left has been waging this cultural war on what was previously America and, you know, healthy American norms. And so now it's really a question of people who are loyal to, you know, whatever remnants of old America are left and those who believe in the new stuff, right? And progressivism and whatnot. So it seems like I said, the division was already there, but Trump coming along and being very explicit, giving a voice to the silent majority in red America, really just brought these things to the surface rather than caused them to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, the fractures were already there. The fault lines were already there. And Trump just forced that. Trump just forced this conversation with his beautiful rhetoric, his fantastic, wonderful rhetoric, well before whites were a minority in enough states where it wouldn't really matter. And with, you know, the racial transformation that's happening in places like Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, and Texas, the fact that more and more white voters are having to confront this before they actually become a minority, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. And it's, again, at the end of the day, this wasn't possible because of some screed on a website. This wasn't possible because of a YouTube video or a podcast. It was possible because a guy named Donald J. Trump ran for office and called Mexicans rapists right before Kate Steinle was murdered in a sanctuary city by an illegal alien. I mean, again, it's all unbelievably serendipitous that this kind of stuff happened when you go back and think about it. But again, it's because of some goofy billionaire ran for office and started talking about stuff that, you know, haphazardly something else happened that validated what he was talking about. So, no, I mean, again, I can't help but tell all of the fantastic Red Ice listeners, and of course, all of the members of your organization, everybody just stay positive, surround yourself with good people, who have a level-headed perspective of what is possible and are pragmatic and don't talk up this idea that, oh, you know, things can change tomorrow and there's going to be a cataclysm, blah, blah, blah. No, there's not going to be a cataclysm. Government's going to continue. Grocery stores are going to be stocked. You know, just surround yourself with people who have a vision and want to get to a place that is going to put us in the best chance to actually thrive and prosper at the end of the day. And that's got to be the goal of everything that we do. And why I'm so glad to have the opportunity to speak to the Red Ice audience is because the individuals who are behind this fantastic operation clearly and truly are motivated by a love for our people. And it's just fantastic and contagious.
Absolutely. I think it's definitely very important to stay positive throughout all of this. There are definitely going to be up and downs going forward, although I am like you, of the opinion that things are moving in the right direction, not only in terms of the dissident right, but in terms of the Trump administration as well. So let's switch gears and talk a little bit more about the dissident right. What are your thoughts on the alt-right as it currently stands?
Oh, gosh. You know, there are so many fantastic people who probably still flock to that banner. I think that, regrettably, 2016 and 2017, a lot of lessons were learned, and I hope that people who were some people who are very close friends of mine, I hope that they are able to learn from mistakes and come back, reevaluate what went wrong, and, you know, maybe even abandon that whole concept, that whole term. Because again, all of our ideas, they don't come from the right per se. They don't come from the left. They don't all come from the left. We are, you know, the dissident right, I believe, is a term that John Derbyshire came up with. I think it's a fantastic term. But again, I think Jared talks about being a white advocate. I don't really like that term either. I don't think the term of what we are has been birthed yet. I do like the concept of identitarians. You know, Gregory Hood and I have kicked that around. I think there's a lot of positive things to that. But I don't think the term of what we truly are and what we represent has been created yet and been coined. But I think that everyone is capable of discernment and realizes that there's not much you can say about 2017 as being a positive. And I think that people are capable of self evaluation, introspection, and I think that they're a lot of positive things will begin to happen. And I think that, you know, alt-right was a great brand at one point, but those days I think have sailed. So that's all I'll say on that. How about that?
Yeah, that's fair. With regards to Charlottesville, I want to preface this by saying that the establishment is ultimately to blame for the chaos that happened, right? The Heafy report was very conclusive about the fact that the police were told to stand down. It led to a lot of chaos, and then they used that to justify shutting down the actual conference or the actual event itself, right? So it was totally the fault of the establishment, you know. But with that said, I think that if you're going to these massive rallies under the banner of white identity and so forth, I think you know that you're going to be getting into fights with Antifa just because you're going to be attacked by them there, right? You're not that you're going there to start fights with them, but it just seems to me that it's just going to make it 10 times worse for you when you get into court. I mean, there was one guy who was, I believe, a member of TWP. He's going to prison for 10 years because he defended himself against DeAndre Harris, right?
There's no point in having rallies. I think that what you guys did when you had your conference in Nashville, a flash rally, do not give your enemy time to conspire and to promote a counter offensive. And to me, the great travesty of Charlottesville was the iconography that was used to promote the event and a lot of the flyers that came out. There was no coherent message. I remember having this conversation with a number of people. It's like, what was the point of the rally? Is Charlottesville about actually going to protect the statues and to rally in support of Robert E. Lee? Or is it this opportunity for these disparate organizations that really, why would you even want to have at all at the same rally and be engaged with. I don't understand what the point of Charlottesville was, and I actually talked to a number of people before the event that were going to have prominent roles. I said, you should not go. This is going to be a fiasco. It is going to be disastrous. And regrettably, that was right. I was on Twitter that whole day, and I remember I looked at my engagement because I was putting out tweets, and Ann Coulter probably retweeted 10 of them that day when Charlottesville was happening. And I was just mesmerized by what was happening because it was so obvious that what you said earlier, that the state did step in and they refused to put down the violence from the left, and they were antagonizing individuals who were there. I've spoken to many people that were there, and they said it was one of the scariest moments when they were forced out of that park, and the just wall of opposition they ran into. And I couldn't do anything else that day because I was just sitting there on Twitter and just shocked by what was happening and the reaction by the corporate media and by blue check mark journalists. And to me, that was a moment where you realize, God, we can never, there's no point in having a set rally that we promote ahead of time because their side has so many individuals who they can inspire to come and confront, and they'll have protection. You know, of course, what we've learned is that in states such as Georgia, where the police, I think it was in a city called Noonan, where they forced the Antifa to unmask, if you actually have a police force and if the state is willing to exercise its monopoly on violence, that can be a positive thing. But again, that's, I don't think many people on our side want to defend that event, that rally in Noonan. I certainly don't. I don't understand why anyone would bring attention to Confederate statues. I mean, good God, dude, we're at a point where Laura Ingalls of Little House on the Prairie is considered racist and has to be depersoned and, removed from history and removed from awards. So this concept that we should even go in and defend Confederate statues or any of these statues, I don't think that's necessary anymore. Let them tear them down. Again, at the end of the day, if we survive, we can rebuild. And what statues come down, you know what? It's terrible. It sucks. It pisses me off. When they took down the Robert E. Lee statue down in New Orleans, that was a sad day. I've been to that statue, seen it many times. But you know what? It can be rebuilt. It can be put back up on its proper mantle and commemorated. But if we don't exist, there will be no one who will commemorate that and our past and our history and our people. And that has to be the motivating drive, because you can erase all you want to, but as long as we exist, as long as we survive, hey, we can rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, going back to the rallies, I think that, you can look to, there are examples of these rallies or rallies similar to Charlottesville that have gone off without, a large degree of chaos ensuing, right? There's a free speech rally that the alt-right did in, I think it was late June of 2017. I mean, that one was near perfect, honestly. I'm sure there were some things that could be critiqued and so forth, but it was in Washington, D.C., and I think we've learned that the cops in D.C. don't mess around. However, MSU, we saw what happened there when the people tried to attend Richard Spencer's speech, right? The police just like blocked their path, led them through, yeah, Antifa, and so forth. So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from Charlottesville is, like, if you're going to do these kinds of rallies, you have to be very careful about where you're doing them. And I think that any, and not just a rally, right? Because a college, a speaking event at a college isn't necessarily a rally, but it's just public events that you announce beforehand, because that will give the opposition time to show up. They will outnumber you. And it will get to the point, I think more often than not, when you see a lot of the more brawler types in the alt-right go out there, they might put up a good fight for a bit, but then it's, 400 on 30, right? And they end up just having to get out. So I don't think that's one of the biggest takeaways from Charlottesville is that there, you just can't, what's going to happen. You know, you're going to get attacked if you announce these events beforehand, right? If you want to be a tough guy and charge into, artillery fire and think that you're doing something for the cause, you can do that, but you're going to end up getting, charged with criminal charges like some of these guys got in Charlottesville and elsewhere just for defending themselves or for doing
Oh,
nothing
just
at
terrible.
all.
Yeah, just terrible. But to counter your point about, that free speech rally, the media is not going to report on that. They're not going to say, oh, these neo-Nazis, these white supremacists showed up and a peaceful rally transpired. They're only gonna highlight and promote the nasty things that might have been said. Obviously, to us, they're not nasty, but they're going to scare their readers into that. So yeah, you have a peaceful rally, but that's not something that the media is going to report on. There's not going to be any. Again, what is the capital of holding these type of events? That has to be what we ask ourselves. I think that when we're ready for public events, that's when the pendulum has completely shifted, and you'll see families come out. You'll see. I mean, go back. You know what my favorite moment of the Trump candidacy was? There's that amazing video of a white man holding his daughter or son and his wife behind him, and she's holding a baby. They're white children, and they walk through a nasty crowd. I don't know if was it Fresno or Los Angeles or somewhere in California, and people are yelling at him, screaming, and the white guy has this resolute, matter-of-fact look on his face, and his wife. She doesn't look that frightened. She kind of looks around and they're holding their two children and they just walk right in to the Trump speech. That to me was such a powerful moment. That is what we should be going for. That is the type of people that we should be attracting to art, to speeches, to conversations. And remember, what motivated people to get behind Trump was building the wall, deportations. And when we're able to have families unapologetically show up and walk through a gauntlet like they did. You know what? That's when you don't have to worry about optics and having these stupid debates, among various forces, with people who want to have different takes on stuff. We should want to appeal. A term that I hate more than anything is normies. I hate these type of this ridiculous nomenclature. You know what? Normal Americans are the type of people that we want to attract because we want to tell them the future that the elite. That egalitarianism has for you is one where your children don't matter. And you know what? To us, the future for your children is all that matters. And that's what we're trying to build. We're trying to build a bridge over this damnable present that is basically trying to ensure that none of us have any hope or semblance of a future, and that the America that our grandparents, that our parents even got to enjoy is thankfully, a thing of the past in their mindset. So, no, I think that the operations and the type of stuff that your organization is doing is the way forward at this point. And again, just surround yourself to the Red Ice listeners. Surround yourself with positive people who aren't preaching, obviously, violence or any of that type of stuff, and who don't engage in dramatic proclamations of what they hope to achieve. Actions speak louder than words. And seeing what you guys did in Nashville, with that fantastic drone shot there at the what was it, the Parthenon there in Nashville, I think that's what's called or something. Those are positive things, and that's what motivates people. And that's the type of thing we want the public to see from us. And because Charlottesville is a four-letter word in a lot of people's minds now, who that was their first time that they've encountered our ideas. And no matter how virtuous our ideas might be, when it's wrapped in the flag of obvious hate and Nazism and all of these symbols that have been from the cradle, basically, instilled and inculcated that they're evil and insidious and nefarious. Come on, guys, what do you think is going to happen to our approval to the polls of our ideas and how we're presented? So
Well
that's
said. Yeah, well said. Well, thank you again for coming on, Paul. I've enjoyed this conversation. We'll have to do it again sometime in the near future.
No, anytime. And just to finish off, I can't thank Red Ice enough. You guys are just fantastic people, and it's a fantastic organization that puts on some of the best events, the best dialogue, and the best discourse. In fact, I was just looking on YouTube, and I'm actually stunned at how many people listened to the conversation I think Heinrich and I had about the book that I did, Whitey on the Moon and NASA. Right. And that's something that pops up. It's like, wow, that's a lot of people are getting the opportunity to hear about, you know, what happened. And I always hope that someone like Elon Musk is just searching late at night, or, you know, one of these people who
you never know. Yeah.
Have that eccentricity, and they listen to just a quick conversation that we're having. That has to be our goal at the end of the day. Everything that we're doing, everything that we do, whether it's a blog post, whether it's an article, we can't just be preaching to the choir, the proverbial choir. We have to be thinking, how can this be presented in a way that if someone is, you know, from an SEO perspective, before we're all kicked off of, you know, websites and stuff and deplatformed, what if somebody were to encounter this article? And this is the first time they've ever thought this way. And they might be ashamed at first for clicking on the link, or for downloading the podcast, or for opening up a new window browser and watching the YouTube video. But what is it that we can say that is going to capture their attention and is going to break through that, whatever impedes them from confronting what it is that we're presenting? And at the end of the day, every time I write something about, you know, NASA or what happened, I think, what would Elon Musk think when he reads this? And I've read a lot about why he's motivated with SpaceX, and, you know, that has to be the goal. There are so many talented people who are attracted and who are part of our nameless movement right now. And you have to think not in terms of just keeping, you know, your current group of people satiated, but how do we grow, and how do we continue to grow, and how do we spread our ideas so that they're palatable in a world where we're presented as worse than cannibals and child molesters. I mean, my God, who was the guy? Was it Jeffrey Dahmer who, when he was getting ready to be sentenced, you know, he wasn't upset about the fact that he was going to go to jail for murdering and eating people, but he was presented as a racist, and he said, "Guys, I'm not a racist." You know, he's not a, you know, right. He admits a murderer and a cannibal and eating people, but hey, he couldn't allow that idea that he was a racist to proliferate.
Yeah, it's the highest heresy in this day and age.
Truly is. No, it truly is, and that's why what we're doing is such a noble endeavor. And I just want to, Patrick, commend you for all that you're doing with I Did in Europa, and keep doing fantastic work with Red Ice, because you know what? No one else is going to do it. And that's another thing that has to motivate you. You know, doing a lot of this stuff a lot of people want to do stuff, but you know what? At the end of the day, it's about people who do stuff, and it's about people who get things done. And it might seem routine and laborious, but as long as a project or initiative is completed, you know what? You can move on to the next thing. And just keep on doing fantastic work, and all the Red Ice listeners, support the people who are putting themselves out there, and help out. And hey, stay positive, stay optimistic. Good things are happening.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Have a good night.
Hey, Patrick, always a pleasure.